Greetings from the freaking Thunderdome. Jeez. Smoke and carnage and ash and no gasoline and...
God, I feel like I'm in a Deep Purple song.
Yeah. Welcome. This is Ask an Atheist, I think. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam, I think. I don't know. There's not enough oxygen in the air for me to really determine that, truthfully. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing outstanding. Well, for the moments I can breathe, I feel outstanding.
And Tom, how are you?
I shouldn't complain.
Yeah, one shouldn't. But this is radio. It is performative complaint. So, I'm beat to crap, and I've been working on... We're about to put KTQA back on the air, hopefully today. Ooh. And so I'm bolting things into racks and building things, and I can breathe fine. There's just nothing in the air but smoke. This is apparently the new normal. I don't know. But I'm not enough of that. Hey, Dave, I remember having an earlier conversation with you about how the Sounders were just doing terribly this year, and
yeah,
and this was going to be the year they finally stunk all the way through.
Yeah, they're on a 6-game win streak.
Yeah.
Which is the longest in franchise history. And tonight they got the Portland Timbers.
We're talking about sports.
Uh-oh. And if they win this game, it puts them in a playoff position.
Oh, really?
Is the smoke helping them?
Like, it doesn't guarantee a playoff position, but it puts them in the
table.
Is
it on the radio anywhere so I can put it on while I'm working?
I believe it is. I will get that to you.
All right, thank you. That would be great.
Cairo is my guess.
Okay.
For the plug for people who are going to listen to this.
Yeah.
The game's already over. But
get in your TARDIS and listen to this game. I was watching TV a couple weeks ago. It's a thing that happens to me, usually at a bar. And this time I was at a bar, and I was watching the game where the Sounders scored the winning goal on the 98th minute of a 97-minute game.
Oh, yes.
That was amazing. So there was like 6 or 7 minutes of stoppage time. Which is the extra time they tack on the end for the laggards. Yeah. Who
it's because the clock doesn't stop. So if you got someone injured or you got to stop for any reason, they just add up all that time and then add it to the end.
Yeah,
and so
they added 6 minutes, which is a lot.
That's a lot, and then the
96 minutes came, and it was like 96:03. Winning goal! And I'm like, so that doesn't count, right? No, totally counts! Sounders win! Yeah!
It totally counted. That was the first game. Carol went hiking recently, my wife Carol, and she went, she hiked the Wonderland Trail for a week and a half.
I call it the Andromeda Galaxy.
There you go.
Okay, I don't know why.
And then the winning streak started while she was on the mountain, and so it looked like we were going to lose that game right up until the very end. We scored 2 goals, 1 right before stoppage time and 1 in stoppage time. And I told Carol, like, you better be glad they scored those 2 goals, because I was going to send you right back up to that mountain till the playoffs came.
Yeah, I was texting you guys while this game was on. Like, what am I? Because for a while, it looked like everybody on the pitch was drunk. And then suddenly they all got smart and goals started happening. Like, what is this? It was great. And then there was a commercial where it looked like a member of the Timbers were dancing a haka with a round off of the log, which was a weird kind of cultural heterodyne. I wasn't ready for.
I really got not much to say about anything there, at least nothing that can be aired over the radio.
Like, yeah. Yeah. This is not a rugby game. Anyway. Yeah, so that's sports. We're done. This is a thing we do every time Dave and I are together.
Fantastic.
I think it's come down to once people stop complaining about how we always talk about sports when I'm on, then we might skip it.
We might skip it, yeah.
But long as people are complaining, well, let's give them what they don't want.
My family went from college football coach to zero interest in 2 generations.
Who?
2.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how that happened. It's just the nerd side took over.
So I have a note on my show notes here. About discussing the card line with you, Dave. So you have a story for us.
So this is it's a topic I love reopening, because honestly, I have all the concepts and ideas put forth in the show. This is one of my absolute favorites. for a short rehash of it. The card line is, the idea when an artist makes art you love, but they are such an awful person, at what point do they cross the line where even if you love their stuff, you're not willing to support them anymore?
The point when a person's behavior, the threshold is crossed where you personally can't ignore the person behind the art.
It's named after Orson Scott Card.
Amazing
course. Author, but such an awful, awful human being that I won't give him my money anymore.
Yeah.
I went to a concert a couple days ago. This is kind of a big one for me. This is the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yes.
Now, for me, I don't have a favorite band. I have five favorite bands, and they cycle. Some, I get in a mood where I'm in this band, and the five are Nirvana, Radiohead, The Smashing Pumpkins, Pink Floyd, and Dresden Dolls / Amanda Palmer.
Oh, we have two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I want to say about 10 years, Smashing Pumpkins was my favorite.
Sure.
And I saw them once, and they were awful. They were absolutely terrible.
Oh, wow.
It was right at the end, right before they broke up. The bassist had already left the band, and they had announced at the end of this tour they were breaking up. They were
What
done.
Year is this?
This is about 2001, I want to say. And so, yeah, you could totally tell they were mailing it in. They didn't care, and it was an awful show. So the fact that they announced this new tour, I'm very excited about it because, once again, one of my top five bands. But at the same time, I'm like, I remember how bad that show was. I also remember hearing some other recordings of theirs that weren't that great, like live shows. I was wondering for a long time, is this just one of those bands that needs to be in a studio? Like, there are certain bands who are just terrible live.
Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young comes to mind.
Yeah, and that was always my suspicion, is that they were definitely a studio band.
Yeah, I've heard actually Led Zeppelin was notorious for being kind of crap in their shows. But turns out I was wrong. The show was outstanding.
Oh, great.
It made me so happy. It was one of those things. It's like, and the reason I have card line implications here is because this is the single most expensive concert ticket I ever bought. I didn't even pay like front row seats, but I paid $100 per ticket for this show.
Oh, wow.
And I bought it going into it thinking it's like, there's a good chance that this is going to be an awful show anyway, but it's a chance to see one of my five favorite bands. So I can't let that go, because I would regret it more if I didn't go than if I went and I hated it. Okay. Having said that, Billy Corgan, man, that guy has gone off the deep end.
On stage?
No, on stage he was actually very good. In fact, he had made a joke on there. It's like, because James Iha was doing, the guitarist was doing most of the talking throughout the show, saying, hey, Seattle, we love you, thank you for blah, 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 here's the next song. And Billy Corgan was just singing. And at the very end, Billy Corgan says, he's like, yeah, I just want to say thanks. You guys have been great. I'm trying to just like not talk and not mess everything up. Even my manager telling me, Billy, just shut up and play your guitar. So that's what I'm trying to do. So it's like someone's getting through to him that like
there's a self-awareness that is not there with other people.
Probably a desire to bring in some income.
Quite possibly.
And from what I hear, because Sam, getting into your interest, Billy Corgan is the owner of one of the smaller wrestling leagues, WCW, I want to say.
Oh, is he? Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He bought that a few years ago. And from what I understand, he has lost quite a bit of money running that.
Oh.
So,
yeah.
The rumors I've heard is like, that's why this tour is happening.
If you don't have it in at the White House, it generally goes bad for you.
Right.
Well, pump.
Well, and he might have an in at the White House because he's that crazy.
Well, that's it. Let us.
He would fit right in.
Let us discuss Billy Corgan's relationship with the card line. What is it that challenges you to consider the card line about Billy Corgan?
So at first it was, I've read some tweets where he starts talking about, your basic conspiracy theories, chemtrails, vaccine, anti-vax crap, like, basic stuff that, okay, you're a celebrity and celebrities just don't get a whole lot of being in touch with the real world. You end up kind of in a sheltered bubble because by necessity you have to.
Right.
I kind of get that. But then I saw that he was a guest on InfoWars.
Oh.
You don't just end up in a bubble and get some
very,
weird ideas.
Very insulated. Yeah.
Yeah, you dove headfirst in the crazy pool to end up as a guest on InfoWars.
Right, right. This is not like, oh, you're going to be on a news program. Where is it? Fox News. Well, okay, you can end up with somebody, and then you find out it's Geraldo's show at the last minute. I was like, okay, yeah, you were kind of sent up a creek on that one. But you don't accidentally go on InfoWars. You don't accidentally InfoWar.
If you're sitting across this table from Alex Jones, you know something went seriously wrong in your life.
You have made a mistake.
And so this is kind of where I'm at and why I think it's such an interesting discussion, because it's like you have the balance of there are so many factors in it. A, how important Smashing Pumpkins is into my life.
Sure.
In my life. It is one of my top five bands. I absolutely love these guys. I still listen to them on the regular, all their old, and they're just amazing. On the flip side, you have this level of crazy that I find literally damaging the world.
Right.
Like, you are causing harm to the world with this level of crazy. You have, you know, you have a platform that a lot of people can see, and you are using it to spread harmful ideas. And there's also the financial aspect. I didn't just buy a CD that cost $15. I invested quite a bit of money to go to the show, and quite this bit of money is going to Billy Corgan, who will continue spreading these hateful
probably
ideas.
Not as much as you'd think.
Probably, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But
he's trying if he's going on the show.
Right.
Well, the surprising thing to... So, does Billy Corgan... What side of the card line are you finding?
He's colluding.
I think he's still on the near side.
Good.
If he starts his own version of InfoWars, if he, you know, Breitbart Pumpkins or something website, then we're going to have to talk about my future financial investment into anything that he does.
Yeah.
But why I think this is such an interesting concept, I can imagine somebody who just hates Smashing Pumpkins, which, admittedly, his voice is a take-it-or-leave-it type of thing. There are a lot of people who just hear his voice like, nope,
yeah,
not there. And their card line for him is, oh, he walked across the street without, like, not a crosswalk? I'm done with him.
Well, yeah, that's the... One has to... I think for the card line to be appropriate, one has to actually appreciate the art.
Right.
So if you don't like the art, then I don't think a card line applies.
Right. Rather, it's a sliding scale. It's like, if you don't like them, it's going to be a much lower bar for you to, like, completely wash your hands of them.
Right. And the whole reason why I used card as the... Other than timeliness as the example is that he was making it clear that proceeds from his work was going to fight marriage equality, was going going towards the fight against civil rights, and that was the moment where it crossed the line for me, where it's like, okay, I can't appreciate his work anymore, because if I give him money, it's going to go to stuff that it's definitely going to go to stuff that I hate.
Right. It's Proposition 8. He was funding opposition to Proposition 8.
And it wasn't so much like I decided that this was the point where it now, every time of thinking about Orson Scott Card, it wasn't the revisionist history America thing, which was surprisingly liberal from somebody like Orson Scott Card,
right,
and Ender's Game and everything else. It was, every time I thought of him, it became this. It wasn't a conscious decision. It was just something that set in, and I'm like, oh, I just can't enjoy this guy anymore.
Right.
Where in the case of Billy Corgan, I am also a fan of Billy Corgan. His voice, whatever, but his guitar playing is exceptional, and was used growing up as an example of a certain, you know, of the style of guitar playing. Like, the guy who was trying to teach me guitar, that's a story in and of itself. Here's the effects rack that he uses. This is what he's doing with his stuff. This is his scale. This is where he's using modes. This is where he's going pentatonic. And so I really got into that music. You know, I don't have to like everybody in the world. Billy Corgan's reputation was already, he's kind of a jackass.
Right.
And this just sort of cements
I remember
that.
I remember the time, who was it? Ozzy Osbourne's wife, Sharon Osbourne. Someone asked, it was like, because she was going off about what an awful human being and just unlikable as hell. And she was like, would you ever work with him? She's like, I wouldn't hire him to be a roadie.
Wow.
Yikes.
I mean, he's not Ted Nugent.
He is not Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. That's a perfect example, because Ted Nugent's music, Stranglehold's an okay song, I guess. Most of it I could really do without. And
not a big fan of that sound?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the Southern rock. It just...
Not your thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Not my thing. Yeah.
Southern rock, out of Michigan? But whatevs. Whatevs. So that was the most expensive concert you went ever.
Yeah,
went to.
Just beat out. I saw a few years ago. Humble brag. I got to see Roger Waters performing The Wall live.
Yeah.
About 10 years ago, and those tickets were
not a lot of humbleness in that humble brag.
Those tickets were about $78. That was a wedding present. The difference is, I'm in a financial place where I can afford this. We really could not afford that Pink Floyd concert. We really should not have gone to that. But no, yeah. So it beat out that.
Tom,
yes.
What was the most expensive concert you ever went to?
I'm trying to think about that. Yeah. It might have been that King Crimson concert.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you start pushing $100. The thing is. My history of going back is like, $20 for a concert ticket. Oh, man, that's way too much.
Yeah.
You know, 1970s and things.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's kind of, what was the last concert I went to? That's the most expensive.
Oh, fair. All right. I don't know if it's a humble brag or humble humiliation in my case, but I got out of the house. I managed to find a job. I was independent, and I wanted to take my dad to a concert. And Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach were in town.
Ooh, that's a fascinating combination.
Yeah, it was a pretty good album, actually.
Okay.
And so it's like, yeah, I'm going to take my dad and his girlfriend and me and my girlfriend, and we're going to go see Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach in concert. How much are the tickets? $200 a piece.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was a year or two ago. Peter Gabriel and Sting playing around here, and by the time I even found out they were coming, you know, the tickets had sold out, and all that were left were scalped, and they were $250 plus, and it's just like, well,
I don't like
them. I would like to go see them, but no.
And it was just like I said, this is just too much money. On the other hand, this is a thing I can do for my dad. I don't know that he's ever seen Elvis Costello live. And
as
so
a gift,
I just buckled down and
like that.
Paid it.
Right.
Yeah.
Every once in a while you have to do, you just go for it. No, I do remember, because you're talking about in the 70s when $20 seemed a lot. I remember I had tickets for Metallica and Alice in Chains with Suicidal Tendencies opening in 1996, I want to say.
And now that's a humble brag.
Those tickets were $35.
Yeah.
And they felt like so expensive. It's like, God, $35 for a ticket?
Oh, you know, and I have a brother who's 10 years older than me, and we lived in the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 60s. He said everyone was aghast when tickets at the Fillmore, you know, to see bands you've heard of,
right,
went from $3 to $3.50. You know, for the Grateful Dead, Pink Floyd, you know, some band nobody had ever heard of came out there and started playing. It's like, who is this? Led Zeppelin? You ever heard of them?
So I'm actually curious if you're what other people's opinions on this are, if they're fans of Smashing Pumpkins, where it is.
Yeah.
So.
How bad does he have to get before you're like, nope, I'm done?
Well, if he starts putting chemicals in contrails, I think that might be a line. I think I'd have a problem with that. Just to prove his point. Should we actually do the show at some point?
Sure. Why not? We have news, right?
I think so. Oh, boy. Where are we go? A Christian missionary from Arizona was arrested by Ugandan police after he verbally harassed, spat on, and attacked staff at the hotel where he was staying in Kampala. Jimmy L. Taylor was recorded by bystanders using racially and sexually vulgar slurs and screamed that he intended to knock the word life out of a Grand Imperial Hotel employee, who he said was not a human. Taylor also questioned whether an employee hated Jesus or himself, only to punch the employee in the face before receiving an answer. Upon arrest, he attempted to disarm a police officer, but later told them that his behavior was due to stress-induced conflict. Yeah! Now, I'll get tilted every now and again. I'm not a guy who's the most healthy person in the world, and I'll get a a bad bent, and I'll get grumpy, and I'll get snappy, and I'll get mean. But it's a lot more. I look less like this guy who looks like he was trying to start a boxing match.
Oof.
And I'm a little bit more like Exorcist, like. You know, I don't. What do you have to do other than be a jerk to act this way?
Man, James Taylor's later albums got dark.
All I know, I mean, having seen the video, that's not something you can play on the air.
No,
so bad.
No,
you know?
I listened to it looking for
all I know clips. Is those guys at the hotel showed the most amazing restraint I have ever seen.
Right.
I could not have done that.
Yeah.
You
played the video.
Done something back.
Yeah, you played the video before we started, and at some point you're like, tell me when you've had enough and we can stop. And I'm just like staring, and it's like, yes, please stop, but I can't enunciate
that.
Like,
car crash.
Just, like, it was hypnotically terrible. He starts dropping racial slurs.
Yeah.
And these, like, punches, like, just straight out. Full fist
just
right in the
boom.
Face.
Yeah. Nice twist and whatever. Well, anyway, so we didn't do a show last week because we were at I got Camp Quest. Camp Quest Northwested, which back in the day we used to call it Shanghai'd, but really I think if you're going to be verbed, Camp Quest Northwest really deserves it because I kind of got Shanghai'd into this one. Is that insensitive? No, it's not. Okay, I remember the history of it.
I've always wondered. Oh, okay, this may not be the time, but I want to hear that history because I've always wondered. Is that racist?
No, I think it's the British Navy would send people to Shanghai.
Oh yeah, you'd be at a bar. Minding your own business, and you just—I don't know what they do—drink until you till you pass out, and you wake up on the ship
on a boat,
Now you are a sailor
on the way to Shanghai. Okay,
Yeah,
gotcha.
But either way, that's the outmoded usage. The new usage is Camp Quest Northwest. I joke. It was a great camp. The kids seemed to have a great time. But we didn't do a show because you do a week of that, you come home, and you're just there's not a word I can use on the radio to just tell you how tired you are. It's just you're whipped. And we were gonna try to do a show earlier in the week, but I'm in the middle of trying to get KTQA back in the air, so it just didn't happen. But it's midweek, and like I'm getting emails and text messages and Facebook messages from everybody just like it's normal, and I don't think people realize that I'm like 200 miles away being screamed at by children. In a positive way. But Tyson, who's been on the show a couple times, yes. And just occasionally sends me a message. No commentary, nothing. Nothing around it, no buttress, nothing. Just sends me this video. No commentary, nothing. And it's the first message Tyson has sent me personally in like 2 years. And he sends me this message, and I go, Tyson's missing you. All right, that's pretty cool. Usually we just chum it up at the bar. And so I press the link, and it's this guy. I'm like, is this an assessment of my character?
did he mention that it was a missionary at first, or was there anything?
No, there was there was nothing. There wasn't even a news story attached to it. It was just the video shared like some Facebook account, possibly one of the people who was involved in that altercation before it went like super viral. And there was nothing. It was just this video, and I was just watching, like, wow. Okay. And then later I find out, like, he's why I left Arizona.
Right.
Well, that kind of guy is why I left there.
Something I learned fairly recently, the Arizona's original name, the Confederate Territory of Arizona.
Yeah.
That's
I didn't know.
Okay,
that.
Yeah. That's like pretty far west for, but I guess it's still the South, you know?
Yeah, sorta. The Civil War history of Arizona is actually pretty interesting. And scary in places. Much much like the rest of the Civil War. So this guy was was Jesusing in Uganda, and apparently Jesus too hard. and blew up and just decided to start a fight at the
you know, he didn't seem to be staggering. He wasn't slurring his speech.
No.
He wasn't, he didn't, best I could tell, he wasn't on meth, but it's like something. Is this something had to be doing behind that?
Is this how you rock bottom on Jesus?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. So he was
mainline Jesus.
Now you got to go to AJ.
Yeah. And then I noticed that the name of this hotel is called the Grand Imperial Hotel. And
that got my attention.
Yeah,
too.
He's grand imperialing at the Grand Imperial Hotel.
He picked that hotel for a reason. Yeah.
Good job, man. Good job. Oh. All right. So let's not talk about this guy anymore, because there's a lot of good people in Arizona who shouldn't. This guy should not be the ambassador for that state. That's just terrible.
My parents are from Arizona. They're wonderful. Oh.
They're from Arizona. Or
they live in Arizona.
Yeah, They live in a really nice part of the state, too. Yeah. The Miami Herald has endorsed an oddball candidate for Florida's 27th District Republican primary who believes she has traveled with aliens in spaceships and communicated with them telepathically. Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera told reporters that nearly a decade ago, when she boarded an alien ship at age 7 and had been visited by 3 large blonde creatures that resembled Rio de Janeiro's Christ the Redeemer statue. The aliens allegedly revealed to her that Africa holds the center of the world's energy and that a cave in Malta held thousands of non-human skulls. Rodriguez expressed gratitude for the newspaper's endorsement and emphasized that her purported alien abduction does not define her. So, large blonde... apparently long hair.
This is some sort of Nordic Jesus alien?
Ma'am, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you'd think I was an alien. That was actually a Dutch dart.
I was going to say, I've seen this movie, and between...
sorry. Okay. No,
but I've seen
Flight
this...
of shrimp.
Yeah. I've seen this movie, and between Jeff Goldblum, Damon Wayans, and Jim Carrey, only Jim Carrey could very generously be described as tall and blonde. These other two are not.
What movie are you thinking of?
Earth Girls Are
Easy.
Okay,
yeah. All right.
Oh, yeah, I was going with Repo Man.
I wanted to give you the reveal, and yeah. It could have gone either way. So I wasn't sure. I gotta say, and we're running up against the end of the segment, I gotta work with politicians with weird ideas all the time. I mean, you have to in this country.
Right.
You know, you've got people who believe that a zombie came back and saved everyone for reasons, and or that somebody was whisked away to a mountain 1,700 miles away for reasons by God, or that
a snowball proves that global warming doesn't exist.
You know, all that sort of stuff. So somebody who was whisked away by... better looking me's in a spaceship. Other than the possible...
Okay, can you prove it didn't happen?
I can... Right, yeah. Nothing changes. I'm okay with it.
Is this Bertrand's tall, blonde Nordic guy?
Yeah. At least it's new. At least, you know, at least when you object to a bill on spiritual reasons, it'll be for a reason I haven't heard before. That's nice.
Allow me to throw this one out to you. You got a choice.
Okay.
Let's say they're both running on the same ticket. You have abducted by aliens lady, or you have the witchcraft lady from New Jersey the last election.
What?
A lady who went off about how witchcraft is real and how we need to start fighting.
Oh, she was not a witch. She wanted to start. No, she wanted to go to
panic
war.
Lady.
Yeah, moral panic lady. Yeah,
there are a dime a dozen moral panic ladies.
Moral panic lady, or aliens are cool lady. I think I know which one I'd rather.
You know,
take direction from.
Now that you mention it,
yeah, you think it could go bad because it always does, and that's the thing with strange beliefs. But the ways it could go bad with alien abduction lady, just because the subset of people who are going to go, oh, okay, yeah, I'm with you, let's totally go destroy that thing, are much smaller than the group of than the moral panic lady witnessed the 1980s and the satanic panic.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And so I will take the MUFON lady over the satanic witchy lady.
Which, to be, yeah. like, I know I'm coming from a very specific point of view, but God, to me, like, alien abduction and satanic panic are equally plausible.
But one is one is more dangerous to think about. One is a lot more dangerous.
Yeah, we're not in the plausibility domain.
Yeah.
We are in the danger domain. What is likely going to cause more harm? A person in political power who's going to use the Christian tenets in order to make villains out of people who are not villains, and perhaps pick out a specific daycare institution and set them on a 25-year legal audit where nothing can ever be proved, bankrupting them, ruining their lives, and all that stuff, or, aliens.
I understand that was, what, the longest trial ever to happen on these shores?
Yes, one of them.
No, I think the.
Oh, okay, the.
Like, the longest trial. Never ended. Well, no, it's...
I think there might be a trial that was, like, continued, and then they just never got back to it, like, in the 19th century,
It hung jury kind of thing, yeah.
But, yeah, I think overall, if I had to pick, and I, you know, okay, my preference is, please no, but if I had to pick, I think I'll take, UFO over Christian weirdness.
Yeah,
maybe she's right because there's a Space Force.
Even
cool alien Nordic Jesus is.
Can I just throw the last twist in there? Republican. I love it. I love everything about this candidate. I love it.
Florida.
I'm punch drunk. You can tell. I have Florida. To go. Becky, save me. I have to go. It's Florida. Obtuse triangle. There are words. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. These are people in front of me. They are going to talk. After the break, I think. Yeah. Goodbye.
Do you have dried skin, a twisted joint, or squiditis? Buy our products at Squid Ink. It solves all your problems.
Side effects, worst injuries, cancer, skin rashes, depression, allergies, and death.
This is totally not a scam. So call 1-800-666-SQUID-INK. Not approved by the FDA.
Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, except now with me, Becky Friedman. Sam is out visiting Republican primary candidates.
Bye!
In his spaceship.
Somewhere in Florida with his Dodge Dart. I'm happy to be here with Tom and Dave, who for some miraculous reason have not left the studio.
Oh, we're having fun.
Yeah. Now I'm picturing a supernatural, except for it's me and Sam chasing down aliens and instead of vampires.
Oh, instead of some ghost hunters, we have moderately good-looking alien hunters?
And now I'm getting worried because last Halloween I sent my kids some pitch black Squid Ink pasta.
Oh, yes.
To serve on Halloween. And now I'm not so sure I did the right thing.
I think you probably did fine, unless we have any, you know, I don't know. I mean, okay. maybe we can address that at some point. I was also Camp Quest Northwested during the past week. And it was great because we get to spend a lot of time with amazing children. All children, I think, are great, but in the context of Camp Quest Northwest, you've got this special, amazing kind of culture that, you know, is created, and this sense of inquiry that's there, and just really having fun. I mean, the
inquiry?
Model.
Inquiry? I've got inquiry.
Not inquiry. Oh. Inquiry.
Oh, sorry.
And it's something that, after coming back from being in that place where you have an environment where children can really be themselves, you realize that the world is not like that for many children. So Sam has left. We've got some Becky bad news up for us. But I think that you guys can help uplift me a little bit from this.
All right.
So school officials in Ashiel, Oklahoma, suspended classes for 2 days after a 12-year-old transgender girl was targeted with violence by community parents on social media. Maddie Rose began junior high using the girl's bathroom, which prompted parents on an unaffiliated closed Facebook page to refer to her as the transgender and dare people to whip his ass until he quits coming to school. Others who commented on more publicly shared screenshots advocated for castration with a good sharp knife and beating up Maddie so it won't come back. Maddie's parents expressed shock that adults were bullying their child, quote, in the name of God. Superintendent Rick Bean held staff meetings, hired a hall monitor to ensure student safety, and advocated going back to what he called the basics, reminding the community that Jesus absolutely wanted to protect children. Help me with this.
Incoherent with rage is the emotion.
Because we managed to protect children and let them be who they want at Camp Quest Northwest without invoking Jesus one bit. It's fine if you want to have Jesus in accompaniment to your own moral protection and encouraging a flourishing of children. But to use Jesus as either the excuse to bully a child with violent threats or as the reason as the reason for protecting children, something here is not calculating right in my head.
Small town Oklahoma, you know, the towns get real small out there.
It did say that there were about 360 students in this entire school district.
Yeah, that's not a lot. Here, okay, so let me throw this idea out just for people to kind of consider. Whether or not you think you have Jesus on your side or Muhammad on your side or Buddha on your side, whoever you think you have on your side.
Three blonde alien creatures resembling Christ the Redeemer.
Exactly. Three Sam Mulveys on your side. Whatever you got. If you are an adult threatening to castrate a 12-year-old child, perhaps you are not on the right side.
Are we the baddies?
Perhaps you might be the villain. Stop and think. It's like, if this were a movie, would the audience think that the child was a villain? The 12-year-old who just wants to go to the bathroom where they're comfortable? Or the adults who are threatening violence against a preteen?
At the end of the day, you have schools and communities that are here to help the flourishing of our children and of our youth. And whether you are affiliated with any particular religion or non-religion, it's unconscionable to threaten and mock children in this way. On the small town Oklahoma line, I do have to say that it seems that some of the likes, comments, shares, upvotes, etc., actually came from people outside of the particular community when more publicly shared, which can be a blessing, so to speak, for this child, knowing that it's not really from their community whatsoever, except for maybe some very vocal parents who,
you know, are
close-minded.
Yeah, they're the ones who wrote that to begin with.
Right.
But how scary would it be for this child in a very sheltered community of 360 students in their entire school, K through 12, to know that on the outside, in the outside world, there are people that would be threatening you with violence? How are we going to then say this world is a place where we embrace you regardless of who you are? And how are we going to help Maddie in Oklahoma or, you know, Adam and Beverly and Charlie in any other number of states to know that when we see these kinds of things by adults? And it brings me back to thinking that, you know what? I think children, although they may be bullies to each other, they kind of know what's up. I think if they were to watch that movie, the children would know that it's not the child who's the villain. The children would know that it's the adults who are the villain. And I it's just my hope that adults will know how to recognize who the villain is without having to invoke whatever kind of religious structure or religious hierarchy you would need in order to guide your moral compass.
One of my favorite programs, sort of, and it's not exactly a charity, but it's similar. It is Dan Savage's It Gets Better project. And the concept that of just like having people who have lived through what you live, have lived through what Maddie is living through, maybe not even that extreme, certainly rarely that extreme, but having lived through that and knowing like there's an other side to this, there is a point at which you don't have to deal with this. There's a point where you can leave your small town and you can find people who are more like-minded. And I think that's so incredibly important. And so like that is a way we can help someone like Maddie, is just reminding her that, like, you may be in a bubble that is really scary right now, and that is really scary, but there are places where it's not. There are places where you can be you, and she can be the person that she is regardless of what other people think. And I think that's best. When it comes to, like, the very idea of, like, the ideas of what is transgender and their place in society and what does your Bible say about this or that, I'm not even willing to engage that conversation with somebody who's going to threaten a child. You lose. You don't get to talk with the adults
yet. Beyond that point.
You know,
way beyond that point.
Yeah. It's like, if you want to have a conversation about ideas, then you can stop bullying children and then start maybe discussing them. But until then, no, I'm not even willing to talk to you about your ideas.
Well, let's go back to Florida for a moment, because we have something that is in a somewhat similar vein, although less extreme because it does not threaten physical violence. But a first grader in Florida has been withdrawn from the fundamentalist Christian school that his parents had hoped to send him to after his father was told that the boy would need to get a haircut prior to attending. Clinton Stanley Jr. had earned a state-funded scholarship to attend A Books Christian Academy, which has only allowed boys to wear their hair above their ears and off their collars. Clinton has dreadlocks. Principal Susan Book reported that the school is getting angry phone calls from people who do not even speak intelligently, and anyone who uses four-letter words in her presence on phone calls gets an earful of Christian music. So, of course, we have C.J. Clinton Jr.'s father, C.J.'s father, saying this is someplace that we wanted to send our child. This is a white lady who's telling my black boy that he needs to cut his dreadlocks. This is policing of black bodies in the name of Christian propriety.
Right.
I used to live near Apopka. You know, that's Central Florida. That's the I-4 corridor. It's that is not got a reputation. It's one of the places in Florida where you don't expect this so much. But heck, I don't know. You know, when you're talking earlier about one's religion guiding the moral compass, I kind of see it as the other way around. People have their moral compasses, and then they create their religion around it.
Right.
And in this case, you know, you're going to be like us. You're not going to be like that.
So perhaps you already have your moral compass that this is how boys look and this is how girls look and boys have to have short hair and, you know, heaven forbid that they have dreadlocks. So you've already got your mindset and then say, somewhere in my Bible, it tells me that this is the proper way for boys to look.
Right. This one does not engender the rage in me that the other one did. Like, I think it's a problem, but I also think it's like a conversation that you could have. You could actually, I feel like you could reason with the people at the school.
It doesn't go all the way into the realm of, no, that's just evil.
You right.
know? It's maybe misguided, but.
And strangely enough, there's a part of this.
Not dangerous.
Right. And strangely enough, there's a part of the story where I'm actually a little bit on the superintendent's side when she's talking about people calling up and swearing and yelling at her over this. And her response is just to play some Christian music at him. I think that's hilarious. Like, I actually think it's like, okay, yeah, if you're not willing to, like, if, and I don't, part of the problem is that I don't know if she is willing to engage in ideas. If someone called up with a reasonable tone and say, look, this is an issue, and you may not understand this issue because I'm assuming here you're not black and you don't know what it's like taking care of, like, your hair as a black person, which is a very different experience than taking care of your hair as a white person, or you don't know, you have different cultural standards than where this kid is coming from. And, you know, if she's willing to listen and engage that discussion, I'm on her side somewhat.
Disagree. I think that this is racism being shielded by an adherence to rules for rules' sake and rules for religious sake. The fact that she says, I'm getting angry phone calls from people who don't even speak intelligently. Who do we think are calling? People who are irate at the further policing of young black bodies. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be getting phone calls from black and African-American individuals. And she's just saying, oh, they don't speak right. Or that they are using curse words in anger, in what I feel is legitimate anger. Maybe not curse out some lady because it's not going to get you any far. But, you know, in legitimate anger, she equates that with unintelligence. And to say, oh, I'm so above it because it's a four-letter word, they're just going to get an earful of Jesus because that's the correct and intelligent thing to do.
So if it weren't for the curse words, it'd be something else.
I believe so. I mean, I that's what I'm seeing here. And the other thing that really, really gets to me about this particular story, this is a state-funded scholarship. This is Florida's voucher systems. These are state funds to go into public, to take public funds to have private schools that are religiously based, that discriminate against kids who wear their hair a certain way. And I gotta say, I am not behind this book lady. I think it might be funny to play their music, but I think that when you do it out of religiosity and racism, I can't back you on that.
Hello and greetings.
I'm on the radio. Oh.
Beware the squid ink.
When you see them sell squid ink, you will always see them wink. Because of that, you must think. Be aware of the squid ink. Not sponsored.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, but today with me, Becky Friedman, and Tom and Dave. Back to looking at some things that help us care for children, if you guys don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
The manufacturer of children's homeopathic products has recalled 32 varieties of so-called medicines due to microbial contamination. King Bio, located in North Carolina, had a recall just last month after the Food and Drug Administration discovered three different bacteria in their water-based products. Two of the microbe species are known to cause infections, especially in individuals with compromised immune systems. Like traditional homeopaths, King Bio markets the idea that repeated dilution of any substance potentizes the water, which cures all manner of ailments, including but not limited to oral yeast infections, lack of assertiveness, forgetfulness, poor concentration, irritability, itching, and fearfulness. This might as well be snake oil.
Oh yeah, no, it's probably not as good for you as snake oil.
Yeah, snake oil actually has uses.
Yeah. The original Chinese snake oil is full of omega-3s, but then by the time they were squeezing rattlesnakes, it was another story, you know.
No, yeah. I mean, okay, I'm going to address, because apparently this is my theme today, I'm going to address people directly. Dear King Bio, there is nothing in your product. How do you mess that up?
By putting something in your product,
you put something in your product,
it will try and hurt you.
Suddenly, yes. it's going to actually cause harm. Like, it's water. You messed up water.
Yeah, you messed up water.
Yeah, well, it's would assuredly. I mean, it doesn't take much either. It's like you can dilute bacteria way down, and it will still hurt you because it will grow.
It'll multiply, right?
Pseudomonas. There's Pseudomonas in their water product.
So Pseudomonas is one of those things that actually can cause lung infections and blood infections.
All kinds. Apparently the type in there, I mean, it's a whole bunch of different species, but the types they have in there, some of them, they don't know what they do, and others can definitely, if you have an immune compromise, some of the stuff they found in there, if you have an immune compromise, can hurt you. If you have cystic fibrosis, can hurt you. And get this, if you were to need, it says it takes care of thrush, this homeopathic remedy. Well, if you need antibiotics for that Pseudomonas, you're going to get thrush.
Oh. Oh, dear.
This is not, the one thing, though, that I have hope, FDA is actually looking at this, which
yes.
I'm good. I wasn't sure they were.
I think that in light of maybe the NIH the NHS in Britain taking homeopathic remedies off their register of acceptable treatments, and in Australia you're having a lot more crackdown on anti-vaxxers and homeopathic alternative treatments and practices and things like that, you know, maybe some folks in the U.S. are catching up to that and saying, look, this isn't just something that's naturopathic and good for you. This is based on something that is completely pseudoscientific, right? Has the flavor of science, the trappings of maybe some scientific words, but doesn't have anything that's backing it. And when you're looking at the case of a child with cystic fibrosis, for instance, that's a really, really, it can be a devastating disease. And to think that, you know, we've made such huge strides that we now have people living into their 20s, 30s, and 40s with cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, I know some people in their 40s with it. And when I was younger, it was uniformly fatal by the time you're a teenager, you know.
And to think that maybe we're backtracking on all of those huge advances by parents deciding that for their gravely ill child with a chronic condition, that we should feed them sugar waters, that we should feed them waters with minerals in them that, you know, are there to help their purported lung infection. And even if it's complementary, right, even if you're trying to say, I'm going to go by what Western medicine and, you know, big, you know, major clinics say in terms of treating my child, and then I'm going to supplement it with something like homeopathic remedies.
And this is a remedy specifically, it says kids right on the label, kids. I mean, look, if you're a grown up and you want to do something that could end up leading to your death, that's one thing. But to subject your kids to it is problematic. You get into anti-vaxxers, and then they could harm the rest of us through their inaction and refusal to get involved. Oof.
So I am glad that the FDA is looking at it. I'm glad that it's not something that's going to, you know, necessarily hurt you tremendously with actually toxically poisoning you, because Dave, as you said, your medicines are nothing. Your medicines are water. How do you screw that up? The screw up there, whether these things were contaminated or not, the screw up is withholding anything that's a reasonable treatment for your child.
Right.
And this is not to say that we need to over-medicate everything. We don't need to pathologize and medicate everything that happens in a human body. But when you're trying to treat major things with water and water only, thinking that it does something else, there's a problem there. And I think that a healthy dose of skepticism is what you need instead of an unhealthy dose of Pseudomonas. So there's one more thing that is a really tough one, and it is about kids. And I think that it seems like it's something that's breaking, but it seems like also something, a piece of news that is continually breaking, that it has been going on. And it just kind of won't leave our conscience alone, and it won't leave our conscience, the conscience of the Catholic Church alone. That is, the largest government-based investigation of child sex abuse at the hands of the Catholic Church revealed that more than 300 priests abused at least 100 children over a period of 7 decades in Pennsylvania. Excuse me, at least 1,000 children over a period of 7 decades in Pennsylvania. A grand jury report detailed how most victims were coerced into not reporting their abuse and how law enforcement was persuaded not to investigate abuse claims in 6 out of 8 of Pennsylvania's Catholic dioceses. The grand jury lobbed harsh words against the church, stating that individual leaders of the church had largely escaped public accountability, and writing that priests were raping little boys and girls, and the men of God who were responsible for them hid it all for decades. The state's bishops asked people to pray for the victims and for the church in light of the report.
Oh.
With Pittsburgh's Bishop David A. Zubik even denying the existence of any cover-up of abuse and stating that the church had been transparent about everything for the past 30 years.
The last 30 years? Really?
Everything over the last 30 years in 6 out of 8 of Pennsylvania's dioceses has been completely transparent. There's been no cover-up whatsoever.
I'm thinking they're saying it's going back, 7 decades?
Yes.
The reason that they're saying it's 7 decades is because that's how far back they look.
Yes.
How far back does it really go?
How far back does it really go, and how widespread is it?
Yeah, millennia?
When this is just 6 out of 8 dioceses in one state, think of how much abuse has been covered up, how much shaming of victims there has been, and the families of children who have been abused, how much that exists in the world. It's not just Boston in the 2000s. It's not just Pennsylvania now. It's worldwide.
Well, and when you look at this grand jury report, what's really frustrating is there's very little that is going to be done because of this report, because the statute of limitations has expired on the vast majority of these cases. And
yeah, but you know these are still going on.
Well, sure, they're still going on, and the church is continuing to cover it up. But my point is that the statute of limitations has expired. Why is there a statute of limitations on child abuse?
There are actually calls, and it goes state by state, there are actually calls to say, let's open a special window to allow these victims who have had cases that have expired to be able to bring civil and criminal suits.
Exactly.
I'm not an attorney, but ex post facto law things might not fly. I don't know.
Well, and more importantly, who is the biggest opponent to those or any discussion of extending or getting rid of statute of limitations on these crimes?
The Catholic Church has been lobbying against this state by state systematically since the Boston Globe broke this open in the early 2000s.
You can't tell me Bishop Zubnik, which sounds like a writer for Pravda, if you ask me, but you can't tell me that you have been absolutely transparent over the last 30 years while your organization is fighting to keep in place the laws that keep your priests from facing any consequences for these actions.
At least now there's light being shed. I mean, the fact there is a grand jury report here. I remember back in the 70s and 80s, being not a Catholic, this was so completely off the radar. I mean, it just wasn't anything that ever came up, certainly not in the press. Mm-hmm. Looking from the outside, priests didn't have this reputation. Now you look back and go, oh my God. You know?
Right. Yeah. And the thing that drives me crazy, like one of the things the grand jury said is that there wasn't like an official, but it was the leaders of the church were acting on a playbook for how to cover this up. They changed language. You know, you don't say rape. You say
improper contact.
Yeah. Don't say a person was
playbook. I think it's scripture, and it goes back. Well, that far.
But like, there is a systematic plan for covering these crimes up, and has been in place for decades.
Oh, and hundreds of years.
And here's what it comes down to. And this is a kind of a theme for our show. It's kind of a theme for all the stories we do. I am tired of being told that, A, I'm immoral because I'm atheist, but I need to get my morality from a group that protects child abusers. I'm tired of being told by a man who sits in a golden throne that I need to give more to the poor. I'm tired of being told by evangelicals that I am the reason that this country is so terrible while they go off and elect Trump. Like, I am tired of the hypocrisy that is constantly being shown by the religious. I'm tired of the Muslims talking about how they're a religion of peace, and then they kill and maim and burn whenever they get the slightest sense of blasphemy. Like, there are so many stories in so many different religions in so many different places. And yes, is every religious person like this? Absolutely not. But why is it that people can't turn back and look at their own? Why is it that, because, you know, in light of this, this is as terrible as you can get. You know, Becky, you pointed out Hemant Mehta in The Friendly Atheist put a list of the crimes that were detailed in this report, and it's not even a full list, and I got maybe a third of the way before I had to stop because I was sick. And there are people who are going to continue defending this church in the face of allegations like that, and they're going to tell me that I'm immoral and they need to get my morality from them.
I think it's starting to crack, though. We've got the man in the golden throne that tells you to give to the poor. Well, a former Vatican ambassador, he's actually an archbishop, this is Carlo Maria Vigano, says that Francis needs to step down. Francis needs to step down. That's someone within the church calling on the Pope to step down.
Wow.
This has been Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, and with Dave, and with Tom, and with me, Becky. Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Our announcements are by the children of Camp Quest Northwest. We're angry, we're happy, we're aghast. We're atheists. See you guys next week.